flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hotcakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like? Delicious.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, local food and drink news for Cambridge and the surrounding areas. I'm Matt Bentman.
And I'm Sue Bailey.
And today we're going to be talking about a new cafe in Cambridge. We'll meet a mother and daughter team who run a pizza van.
We also catch up with Flavour regular Steve Thompson, the foraging chef. And this month it's going to be blackberries, plums, mushrooms, elderberries and black garlic.
We'll take in a Chinese tea ceremony at a local restaurant.
And have plenty of local food news, social media news, and at the end of the programme, a brief look at local food jobs available.
OK, so let's begin then with that cafe. The space on Gonville and Keys site off West Road that was, until recently, occupied by Harvey's Coffee House, has been taken over by a new cafe called Flory. Alan spoke with the new owners, Lindsay and Tracy, about what made them take it on.
I think Tracy and I thought that it felt like a good opportunity. There's a lot of potential in the site to be able to grow it. It already obviously had an existing trade and loyal customer base through Harvey's, and we hope that through what we'll do, we'll be able to retain quite a lot of those student customer base, but we'll also look to grow local customer trade. Mainly, we hope going forward that we'll be able to do quite a substantial food offering that will just be more than what Harvey's was offering before.
When you say you want to retain your customer base, what sort of things are you doing to retain it? There are other things you're keeping the same. Tracy?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's just, you know, having that welcoming, that smiley face behind the counter, I think that's really important. And also the quality of the coffee and the drinks that the students are used to, and same likewise with the bakes. And that's important to us, to retain that sort of consistency that was there previously.
Yeah, I'm quite interested in coffee. Where do you get the coffee from? Which
Square Mile. So they're a East London-based roasters. They were used previously, so again, it's about that consistency that we want to keep.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the food offer that's going to happen? So it's not happening yet?
No, so at the moment, we've still got pastries, we've got cakes, but I think we're really aware that both the students and other customers would really like to have savoury option. And as I said before, I think for us, in terms of being able to grow the business, that's one avenue that we think that we'll be able to explore. So we're just working at the moment towards setting up a new kitchen area. And
what's in the existing space?
So it's currently a bar area that's attached to the room that we're trading in. So it just needs a little bit of renovating. And then we're hopeful that by October, or certainly maybe before that, but certainly by the time the students have come back, we'll initially be able to start with a sort of small menu of like freshly made sandwiches every day, salads, soups, homemade quiches, homemade sausage rolls, and that by doing that, hopefully it will also attract not only the students to come in for lunch, but also people from the rest of the site and, as I said, local customers.
Is it going to be easy to attract other people from outside the university? Do people from outside the university know this place exists?
I think a few people do, but I mean, we're obviously wanting to sort of extend that, the brand and the awareness of who we are and what we do outside of the college. So I think that's where the marketing and PR side of it will come in. Much more promotion and working with the different colleges in and around the area as well, I think is going to be key.
There's quite a lot of competition on this site though, isn't it? On the Sedgwick site, there's quite a few coffee shops.
Yeah, you've got Arc, which is just over the way, but I think that's a slightly different proposition.
Lindsay, you also run the Grantchester Tea Garden, and that's obviously got a sort of seasonal aspect to it. But this place has as well, hasn't it? Or maybe a termly and holiday aspect to it, the fewer students around for almost half the year.
I mean, yeah, that's absolutely true. We are definitely probably going to be busier during term time than we are during the holidays. And I have the same thing at the Orchard, in that we are much busier during the summer when the weather's out. I think people see us as a very summer place to go and sit in a deck chair. Part of my business plan when I took over the Orchard was to attract more locals there, and I think because a lot of people don't know that it's open during the winter. So that's what we're working towards, and it is working. What we've been doing there is working, and I think we can definitely apply the same logic in terms of getting local trade, so that when the students aren't here, that we still have a, you know, a steady customer base that will balance out the kind of highs and lows of term time and not term time. Yeah.
Well, we're in the summer break now. There are a reasonable number of people around, aren't there?
There are a reasonable number of people around, but I mean, obviously, given that we've just opened and, you know, we're not completely set up as how we would like to be yet, and we haven't, you know, we had a very, very quick transitional period in terms of taking over and getting in. So I think Tracy and I feel like the next sort of couple of months are a bit of a bedding in period for us, and that really October, when term starts, that'll probably be sort of the, you know, that's really like our start, I think. So yes, and you know, there are people around at the moment, but I think going forward, hopefully by this point next summer, we'll have a bigger customer base and we'll be busier during the holidays.
And why is it called Florey?
It is named after Howard Florey, who was a famous scientist, Australian scientist actually. He was an alumni of Keyes, but also went to Oxford.
And what did he do?
Oh, penicillin. So he invented penicillin, or a usable form of penicillin.
Right, because it was Fleming, wasn't it, originally?
Exactly. Florey was then able to make it into a more usable form.
An ingestible form.
Exactly.
Right, so having a sort of cafe named after him seems quite appropriate,
yeah,
really.
Exactly.
Right, well, good luck with it. I'll speak to you in a year and see how it's gone.
And if you're not quite sure how to find Florey Cafe, it's located in Harvey Court. That's at the Gonville and Keys College on West Road.
Now, details of free food available in and around Cambridge. The information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app. And this exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Will Run on Coleridge Road has a selection of rolls to give away, 15 ciabattas, 9 crusty rolls and 3 crusty wholemeal, as well as 7 white baguettes. These were all collected from Waitrose, by the way. And next up is Alex on Barton Road, just past the Gonville and Keys Sports Ground. He's got 20 mixed pastries, all mixed together, including cookies, Danish and cinnamon rolls. So maybe just to collect them all in one go, he says. And Sandra on St Albans Road has an unopened box of Knorr fish stock cubes available. But also this week, Olio has started a new list of items at supermarkets for reduced prices. Iceland at Histon Road has signed up for this. So what it is you look on Olio, and you can see that at any time what reduced stock items they have, how much it's reduced for, and exactly how many of those items are left. It's all updated in real time, I think. So, for example, they've currently got 8 packs of raspberries at 125 grams, 50% off, down to £1.08. And there's loads more items in that list too. I think it's a really good idea. Let's hope more shops sign up to this. Anyway, that's our look at Olio for today.
And another free app called Too Good To Go has unsold food items from restaurants and shops, often at less than half price. Rather than specifying each leftover item, the surplus food is simply packaged as a magic bag, and that's ready for you to take home, instead of it being binned at the end of the day's trading. Locals that provide magic bags include Al Pomodoro, the Cambridge Oven, Namaste, Norfolk Street Bakery, and then there's the Co-op, Pret-a-Manger, Greggs, and many more.
Yeah, I've picked up many magic bags, well, not many, a few, from Too Good To Go. A good few times, though. I've got some real bargains, but I've never beaten my friend's best pickup, which was when he got a magic bag full of different sushi packs. We calculated it cost about £25, but it only cost him about 5 or 6.
Wow.
That's really good. Anyway, moving on, the next feature is about a mother and daughter team, and they run a pizza truck called La Biga Pizza, and they make all their pizzas with sourdough.
My grandma, she's a village nurse. My sourdough is 85 years old,
sourdough has always been a part of our family, really. We've always been growing it.
Yeah, when I make my dough, feeling is my grandma always next to me. Okay. It's very important. Yes. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Barfin.
My name is Norton.
And we are the owners of La Viga Pizza. We make sourdough pizza from Wednesday to Saturday in different spots of Cambridge. So my mum had this sourdough starter passed down. Her grandmother wasn't educated. She was just a wife to a man who was a worker there and would say that the sourdough is good for you. You should always eat it. It's good for your health. And now, many, many years later, for us to understand that the bacteria within the sourdough is good for our guts, and now my mum making her pizza with this, she truly says, I don't want other people to eat things that I wouldn't eat. In our household, we eat the leftover pizza doughs that we have. We will turn it into flatbreads. We will cook it, and that's the bread we eat at home. We're Turkish. Our country's food is known for a lot of meat-based food. But actually, what people don't recognize a lot is quite a lot of different regions in Turkey naturally are vegetarian and vegan. And I think my mother has the natural vegetarian vegan taste bud. She started coming up with her own pizzas, caprino, the one with goat's cheese, some pepper, and fiorielli, the long-stem refried broccoli. That pizza doesn't really exist in Italy, but my mum was like, oh, but this will be so lovely together. And I think that it's truly mostly her, you know, ancient taste buds of where she comes from.
Norton says that an important part of the workday is setting up an Italian pizza playlist. So that's what we'll do here. Per sentire una canzone
con te. My kitchen is very cosmopolitan because it's my grandma, she's Greek. My grandma, my father's side is Kurdish. I grew up in Turkey. I am so happy. I'm grow up is very
rich family.
Rich family. Yes.
Combining Italian food with her Turkish taste buds. So we have a lot of vegetarian options. The vegan cheese that she buys, it's also very important for her. She'll taste it to see if she can pair it up with other things. She's very happy for her customers to say, can I have vegan cheese with this and that? She loves people like that. She goes, yes, I should try that. And then she'll try to make it herself. So this is how it all started, really. My mum makes her own cheese. My mum makes her own butter. We actually travel to Grantchester to get some raw milk. And we will make our own cream here. Different chefs will do different things. I mean, some chefs won't put salt in the dough at all. Some believe just a bit of salt and a bit of oil will allow the dough itself, once it's being cooked, to be kind of glazed on the outside. So even to that degree, it's quite different from family to family in Italy. So to be able to go and learn that from different people and to be able to create your own little recipe in your own family, I guess, is what it means to make good Italian pizza.
Ah, so many pizzas on the menu. Here's a couple. The Indugia, San Marzano tomato sauce, fiori di latte mozzarella with spicy Calabrian pork sausage. Or the Macinata with tomato, mincemeat, onion, garlic, and mozzarella taglio Napoli.
My water is very important because I fermented it with sunflower water.
Yes, so what she means by this is she loves the smell, yeah, and the extra process of taking flour that smells lovely. Just roses could be...
Turkish name is ıhlamur.
We can make a tea out of it. It's a tree, actually. There's a lot of it in Cambridge. She will pick those, leave it in water, and then she'll use that water to grow her sourdough. That leaves beautiful smell, which then transfers over. So she really works so hard on her sourdough starter. And I think that's why we're called La Viga. You know, pre-ferment is very important for us.
If you like fish on your pizza, there's the Il Mare with anchovies, carpes, tuna and onions. And here's one of their vegan pizzas, the Cavolo, tomato sauce mixed with burrata cream, crispy kale and roasted peppers. Non ti fidare.
The smell of the pizzas all over the neighborhood. My mum thinks that that's because of the extra steps that she takes for her sourdough, but also because she'll try her very best to buy wood, that apple tree essentially, and she'll mix it with ash. That gives the smoky flavor.
Flour and fruit smell together is very nice, very delicious.
I remember back in 2015, I spoke to one of the councillors who was appointed to Mitcham's Cornerway, and she was talking about how they had an intention, a plan, to develop a third major cog. The focal points at the moment are the very centre of Cambridge, like where the market is. Then another major focal point is Mill Road.
Mm-hmm.
And so their intention was to turn Chesterton Road into something similar, because Chesterton is a nice long road, like the Mill Road Mile. And that's something that has been gradually building over the last 5 years or so.
Yes.
And we've noticed more and more places opening up or reopening into larger businesses because they're becoming successful. You know, you've chosen a good spot.
Yes, we saw Chesterton Road grow and grow and grow. And it's now, you know, blooming even more, which is beautiful. Also, such an expensive thing to exist in the city centre. We are, as a food truck owner, if we wanted to open up our own brick and mortar, it's so, so expensive that people do not recognise. So I think that having areas like Chesterton Road that is growing gives very, very, very small companies like ours maybe an area to be able to grow, to be able to turn into a brick and mortar. City centre. It's maybe listeners who don't have a business wouldn't know this, but truly there's so much involved in opening up a place. And since our city is so busy, the city centre is almost unreachable for small business owners as us. Mill Road also, it's extremely popular in its own corner and it's unreachable for us as very, very small business owners. So having areas where there possibly is a space for us to open up something small is such a beautiful thing to see. So hopefully Chesterton will continue. And we love the people around here. And if you ever want to come by to even just say hi, my mum is very well known for just making pizza, slicing it and leaving it there for people to just come and grab. So never ever think that just because you don't have enough money that day, just come by, say hi, you'll get grab a slice that we're eating or some, you know, some of our friends are eating and you can become friends with us and taste our pizza.
That was Berfin and her mother Nurton of La Biga Pizza, the pizza truck that you can find on Chesterton Road on Saturdays from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. The spelling of the pizza truck is La Biga Pizza, spelt B-I-G-A, and that means pre-ferment, relating to their sourdough. Those sourdough pizzas, they ferment for a whole day prior to cooking them in their 450-degree oven. On Wednesdays, you can find La Biga Pizza outside Bell School on Red Cross Lane, Thursdays at Caldecott Social Club, and Fridays at Haslingfield Village Hall. And their website, so that you can check out their full menu, is labiga.co.uk. They also do desserts, by the way, such as the Nutella dessert pizzas with Nutella, strawberries or marshmallow, white chocolate shavings. And they do tiramisu too, and pistachio tiramisu, and proper good-sized portions of tiramisu as well. Nothing small, I've seen it.
Well, on to our first news briefing now, starting with Cambridge Markets, who are welcoming new traders. I say markets because, in fact, there's two, the Arts and Craft Market in All Saints Garden, and the one we're most concerned with on Flavour, the Market Square, the one with all the food stalls. And this market is open every day except Christmas Day, Boxing Day and New Year's Day, and describes itself as affordable, central and buzzing with opportunity. Now, we've recorded at Cambridge Market a lot over the last 15 years, with great food and knowledgeable stallholders. And if this sounds like an opportunity for your business, then just head online to cambridge.gov.uk and type Market Trading License into their search bar.
Now here's one for the beer aficionado in your life, the Good Beer Guide 2026. This is for those seeking the best pints in the best pubs across the UK, and this book is available for pre-order. It's a completely independent publication with listings cast by camera members, with £2 off if you order on the Camera Shop website.
Indian and Bangladeshi restaurant Royal Spice has reopened in a new, larger venue on 68 Chesterton Road. It's been open a couple of weeks now. And amongst their menu of tandoori, biryani, balti and vegetable dishes, you will find their Royal Spice classics and specialities like North Indian garlic chili chicken, slow-braised beef mangsho buna, and purple tiger, which is king prawns and aubergine cooked with fresh coriander in a citrus relish.
Now, the kiosk on Jesus Green was taken over the other year by Amanda Langley, who chefed at the University Arms Hotel. Amanda has aimed to change the public perception of what a kiosk offers with good food to make it a proper destination during your summer. And they add to this as well with fun events like summer storytelling for grown-ups at the Jesus Green kiosk. And this is happening every Friday in August from 6 to 7:30 p.m. So just bring a blanket or a camping chair to sit on and enjoy the latest food and stories that the kiosk has to offer.
We mentioned the Geldart pub in Ainsworth Street in our last episode to say that they were selling jars of Mr. McGee's honey. But we didn't mention that the Geldart was named Local Pub of the Year by CAMRA. That's the Campaign for Real Ale, the best pub in the country. So, hearty congratulations to Geldart and its landlord Elvis.
Yeah, congratulations Elvis. Next up is Frank's Farm in Ellsworth. That's a food and drink retail park building a community around sustainable eating. It's got a farm shop and a lunch spot, and it's got items like the Ellsworth burger, breakfast bagels, fish and chips and coffee. And they're having a farm day fiesta. This is on Saturday the 16th of August. Gin lovers bring your curiosity, it says. And they've also got a chocolatiers on site, award-winning ice cream on site, a bakery and a deli too. Really good location.
Nice. So, August is stone fruit season and you'll find 12 different types of peaches and apricots at Culinaris. And that's a delicatessen on Mill Road, so well worth a visit.
Thrive, the vegan-friendly cafe on Norfolk Street, has been named as a finalist for Small Business of the Year, and that's at the Cambridge Independent Business Awards. Now, Thrive started during or at the end of COVID lockdown, I think. They're open 7 days a week until 5 p.m, 6 p.m. on Saturdays. Big congratulations to them.
There's a healthy eating workshop in Cambridge FA Football Club, and that's Bridge Road in Histon and Impington. This is run by a nutritionist, and it aims to help anyone and everyone to prepare affordable, healthy meals with recipes and food to take home. This is on Tuesday, the 12th of August. Booking is required, though, and you'll need to email info@proformanceuk.com.
Now, if we look quite a bit further ahead to Sunday, the 28th of September, it's going to be the Cambridge Vegan Market on Parker's Peace. So you can expect plenty of vegan street food vendors, artisan bakers, craft brewers, zero waste champions, and lots more.
And we've got the Cambridge Biodiversity and Regenerative Food Festival on Parker's Peace, and that's also at the end of September. It's the first one of these, and there's quite a few of them going on around the country. And Cambridge's one will feature lots of organic growers, bakers, crafters, heritage plants and seeds, and demos, street food and workshops. It's free, and it should make for a pretty fun Saturday.
Now some sad news this week, and this is about the charity Co-Farm. They've announced that they're having to wind up their activities. Co-Farm, if you don't know, they're a big plot in a field on Barnwell Road, not far from the big Sainsbury's near Coldham's Lane. Gavin Shelton started it 5 years ago to rethink climate change, biodiversity loss and health inequalities. And he did this by growing stacks of food, which was donated to food hubs across the city. There's been so many volunteers there over the 5 years and a colossal amount of fresh organic fruit and veg that was grown. Abbey People and Cambridge Sustainable Food were going to be working together to harvest and water the crops at the farm and distribute them to the city's food networks. Meanwhile, Gavin and co are searching for organisations who can take the site on. It's a real shame about this one.
Yeah, that's really unfortunate. Sorry to hear that. Well, we're going to take a short break now, but we'll be back in a couple of minutes with a Chinese tea ceremony, summer foraging and plenty more local news.
Cambridge Radio.
Sunday nights descend into the world of indie music with Stagger, the alternative music show with rap, electronica and experimental music.
I'm Tom. I'm here with you for the whole load of fantastic music that I really, really hope you enjoy.
It's your backstage pass to the indie music scene.
And they're also on the bill. And then before that, we had a live version of Your House Has Ghosts, a favourite track of ours.
Great track. What a lineup that is.
He's a brilliant night.
Stagger, online whenever you want, and Sunday at 10 on Cambridge Radio.
The annual Bridge the Gap charity walk returns to Cambridge on Sunday, September the 14th. I'm Neil Thompson from Rumsey Mill.
And I'm Lana Matthews from the Arthur Rank Hospice Charity. Come join us on this family-friendly, leisurely stroll through the grounds of some of Cambridge's finest colleges in support of our charities. The walk starts and ends on Parker's Peace, where there'll be food, drink and entertainment for everyone.
Hundreds of people have already signed up, so don't miss out. Just visit arhc.org.uk/BTG.
Or look out for the QR code on the Bridge the Gap posters and flyers displayed across Cambridge.
Looking for a full day of summer fun in South Cambridgeshire? Head to Kingsway Golf Centre, where golf meets adventure. For just £49.99, grab your day pass and enjoy foot golf, pitch and putt, and our epic Jurassic Links adventure golf. Got a team? Only £20 for up to 6 players on foot golf or Jurassic Links. Perfect for friends, families and epic group days out. New to golf? No worries. We offer free coaching for beginners and groups, so anyone can give it a go. And if you're ready to tee off, you can enjoy our 9-hole course. Find us at Kingsway Golf Centre, Cambridge Road, Melbourne. Book now at kingswaygolfcentre.co.uk.
Welcome back to Flavour. Now, in China, tea was regarded as one of the 7 daily necessities, the others being firewood, rice, oil, salt, soy sauce, and vinegar. The Chinese have written many books on tea, such as The Treatise on Tea and The Treatise on Superfluous Things. These were from like 500 years ago, and they're full of etiquette surrounding the elegant and refined pursuit of tea. Fast forward to this week, and I took a trip to the Dumpling Tree restaurant on Pern Road, where host Laura Truman and a Chinese tea master were holding a ceremony about Gong Fu Cha. Gong Fu Cha means brewing tea with discipline and skill. It's an ancient Chinese tea method, thousands of years old apparently, which is slightly longer than Coronation Street's been on. There are many intricate steps to making this extremely high-quality tea. Luckily, you can see how it's done here at the Dumpling Tree restaurant in Cambridge.
And this time, it's floral scented tea, because we have just so many varieties in China. Dumpling Tree has kind of established itself for authentic food in Cambridge. Now we think, why not team up with Chinese tea? That will offer a complete experience of Chinese way of life.
Gong Fu tea is all about multiple short infusions. You can really see how the tea changes across its various steeps, changing its taste, its smell, and its appearance.
Different tea give you different qualities. Some of them calm you down, some make you clear-minded. There's so many philosophies developed from tea sessions.
Welcome everybody to our tea tasting.
In summer, Stephen comes to Cambridge to do Chinese tea tasting and promote Gong Fu Cha. He is a master of floral tea. So, the idea for this event is we try 4 teas. We appreciate them slowly, and we think which one of them is the best for us.
So before you leave, you'll be presented with a little sachet of your favourite tea. So you need to remember which one.
And the 4 teas being tasted today include yellow tea and orchid, green tea and jasmine, Jinju Mei black tea and osmanthus, and finally, moonlight white tea and gardenia.
Because tea has got different grades. The first 2 leaves, the second 2 leaves. This one is the top grade. It's also a very enduring tradition as well. It's been, you know, thousands of years. Yes.
Do you have any of the American or English brands?
Oh, we do. Starbucks, yeah. Everything is there.
Right.
It's exactly the same as what you get from here.
Stephen goes around the table delicately pouring the floral tea.
But then you can see the tea houses everywhere. If you can see in China, in the tea shops, it's like a city. Yeah, store after store, store after store. We even have recipes to use this brewed tea for dishes. Nothing goes waste.
No,
because they're good for your health, and they can make dishes out of the tea.
So the tea is served in little tiny teacups.
I describe it as maybe four thimblefuls.
Three sips, maybe?
Three small sips.
Porcelain cups called shaibei. I think that's how it's pronounced.
This is a typical size.
Oh, really?
Yes. The so better different. The tea, the smaller the cup is.
Okay, but day to day?
Day to day, we just get the mug.
Yeah, so
well,
yeah,
just for. But this is like a good hospitality, and everything comes small, delicate. So every time when you do a brew, it's 2.5 grams. Bear in mind it's got some flowers in it, which hasn't got caffeine. And then that's why the size of the cup will limit your intake, because it's drunk over a length of time.
Stephen places the tea leaves directly into the gaiwan. The gaiwan is the teapot. Only there's no tea bag. There's no steeper either. The tea and the water just mix together freely, like horrible 50s beatniks.
So the leaves are so large that he can drain them just using the lid of that pot. We don't need the tea strainers like we use,
Notice everything is so slow and steady just to enhance the experience, just calm you down and make you focused just on one thing.
Stephen, the tea master, uses a kettle with a long gooseneck spout.
You mustn't rush pouring the tea. Even you can see the tea, the spout is very thin. It's very precise when you pour it. So it's kind of it's just draw your attention to that point.
And this allows him to slowly pour the water over the tea leaves from high up, pouring it into the gaiwan with great precision.
I like the ritual sometimes even more than the tea, because, you know, it can be very elegantly done, each action. Steady your nerves, steady your thoughts, and then bring calm to the whole body.
The tea is then transferred from the gaiwan into a gongdao bei, which looks like a big cup, before pouring it into the guests' individual little teacups. This ensures an even brew is served to everybody.
I mean, some tea masters, they are so good. They can even tell you where this tea is from and then how many years it has been cured for. Yeah, that's years of experience.
So I asked some of the guests what they thought.
In Japanese tea ceremonies, you use a cup, you pour the powdered tea and dilute it with hot water, whereas here you brew the leaves multiple times, create a combined brew, and then you drink really tiny sips from a tiny cup, whereas in Japan you drink it from almost like a bowl-shaped cup, and there's quite a lot more tea. The texture of the tea is also different. Matcha is almost creamy, whereas this is very light, very mild, very floral, and very much more fragrant, I feel. Higher aroma than taste, I would say, yeah.
So I think it's more about the flavour than the taste. I'm not a native English speaker, so when I say flavour, I mean the smell.
So you smell first before you sip?
Yes, with a nice book on the side, definitely.
It feels a bit more ritualistic to me, like something you do while doing something else, as she was saying, reading a book. I feel like English tea is more like something you drink in the morning or something you drink in the afternoon with some sweets. Like when you go to a pub, you drink a beer. This one feels more like something you do personally.
So everything has got its purpose. Also, everything is a gesture of friendship. You know, you offer people tea and you watch people brew it in front of you.
But it's generally Chinese culture, isn't
Chinese
it?
Chinese culture,
share the food, share tea.
So. And also, it's good icebreaker.
Yes.
They just open up after
it's like
the tea.
A joint event.
Yes.
Even like when you serve food in China, you serve in the middle so everyone can share.
Yes, that's why the Chinese tables are normally
exactly.
round. And they've got a rotating plate rather than we have a plate ourselves.
Yes.
With something like tea and tea ceremonies more generally, part of the goal is like to do it slowly, to enjoy every little bit, not just rush through like in a busy life where you just want to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
So appreciating every step is kind of the goal of something like this.
In Japanese tea ceremony, there is a foundational concept called Ichido Ichinen, which is like once in a lifetime, which means when you're attending this ceremony, you focus on the moment because it's a once in a lifetime moment. It's not going to come back again. So very much a focus on the transience of every moment and trying to focus on the importance and kind of living in the moment.
What does Moonlight White Tea taste like?
It tastes sweet. It smells less strong than the previous ones, which had less of a taste but a very strong smell. And this one has more taste, less smell.
The first one was also like barely any smell and then some taste.
It's delicate. I think it's a good palate cleanser, you know, just neutral, just sort of between meals.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the first and this is the last of the four. So I'm deciding whether the first one or this one is my favourite.
It's good. I recommend if you've got the time, come along and do something similar. Broaden your horizons.
I discovered a lot of new tea flavours and it was also fun. You get to talk to a lot of new people.
Are you much of a tea drinker outside of an event like this?
I am. I drink tea every day. But I mostly drink green tea and Lady Grey. Those are my two common choices, yes.
I think the smell is important. If you've ever like closed your eye while your nose while eating,
gotten a cold,
even COVID, I guess. Oh, yeah. It tastes very different and it tastes much weaker. So I think it's both the idea of like build up some anticipation, but also the idea of enhancing the smell, the taste. Yeah.
The smell is so much a function of what we're doing here.
Oh, I have to say, I love Cambridge Community Radio. Listen to it all the time. The food program is really, really good. Highly recommended.
Because I promote Chinese Kung Fu tea all over the world, especially in Cambridge. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This place will become a hub of not just Chinese cuisine, also Chinese tea as well. So we are thinking of having a Kung Fu tea experience in the afternoon so people can come here enjoying different kind of Chinese tea and at the same time a little bit of snack and socialize.
I learned to make tea when I was 5. I was never a fizzy drinks fan, I just wanted tea. And I liked the ceremony of making it too, but it is nothing, nothing like the ceremony involved in Gong Fu tea. But I like what the Chinese ceremony brings out in you, about finding peace in your day, appreciating the little things. And there's far more nuance to it than what we just heard there. I find calm in making coffee at home with one of those old Italian moka pots. I get really anal about getting the heat exactly right so that the coffee doesn't spit as it percolates, getting the right temperature for the milk and so on. And I know that Alan loves cooking in his kitchen. He says hours just go by and he doesn't notice. Do you have anything similar, Sue? Is there something that you lose yourself in?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, food cookery, but I love doing research and research about food history, and I'm afraid I'm a research nerd and I end up going down way too many research rabbit holes. Dangerous.
Well, as Laura, the owner of the Dumpling Tree restaurant, said there is going to be more tea tasting experiences at the Dumpling Tree in future, and it's got a great menu too. Handmade dumplings, Yunnan rice noodles, copper pot rice with bacon, bird's nest fried chicken, stir-fried rice flakes with minced pork, and plenty of parking, which can be tricky in this town.
Sounds great. Well, time for a bit more news now. The Caxton Farmers Market returns on Sunday the 10th of August at Caxton Village Hall. Lots of traders will be there, including Sweet Pea Market Garden, Wheatsheaf Brewery, Frank's Farm, Trinity Orchards of Cambridge, and Granola Queen Ely.
Ferment Table is run by Catalina Brumann, and she does workshops and events about the joys of fermentation and how good it is for you. Just like with La Biga Pizza, who we featured earlier, using sourdough in their pizzas, which are lighter and better for you and don't leave you feeling bloated, Ferment Table have workshops about such things. And these workshops are coming up on the 7th of September, which is a turmeric and pineapple sauerkraut class. And there's also a workshop to improve gut microbiome and reduce inflammation. That's on the 21st of September. Both of these classes are in Eddington and both cost £40. And you can book via the website fermentable.co.uk.
And a heads up that the Cambridge Oktoberfest will be coming to Jesus Green on the 26th and 27th September. And expect lots of beer, lederhosen and live Schlagen music. What is Schlagen music, Matt?
Yeah, well, one description online says that it evolved after World War II as a German backlash against American rock and roll. It's mostly full of kind of cliched lyrics and rhythms. It's Eurovision pop, basically. But you'll need to book tickets for the Oktoberfest, which is why we're mentioning it here so early. So, just go to cambridge-oktoberfest.co.uk. Standard tickets are £10 to £15, but you can get a Bavarian ticket for £35. And that gets you seating, a 1.5-pint, I think, giant...
Stein
of Bavarian fast beer. You also get bratwurst in bread and an Underberg German shot. Students get in for a tenner, and they get that stein of beer as well. Lucky dogs.
Well, Limoncello, the Italian deli and restaurant on Mill Road, have recently added pistachio tiramisu to their menu, and they're going to leave it on there from now on because it's been such a success.
Yeah, anything with pistachio, and it just seems to fly off the shelves. I know a few people who love the cakes at Modigliani, which is also on Mill Road. They go especially nuts, pun intended, whenever Kevin the chef at Modigliani makes anything pistachio-based.
Corn on the Cob is in season, and it's available now at Bushel Box Farm Shop.
And if you go to Cambridge Market, you'll find the Halouman stall. Cameron runs that stall. He serves lots of halloumi dishes. This time, he's got something new, with potato croquettes with basil, served with a halloumi spinach cheesy spice. I bet Popeye would be up for that.
Nice. Tomatoes are now available at Forest Farm Shop.
And Sasha and Kira, who run Molino Handmade Pasta, and they won the Street Food Pop-Up of the Year at this year's Velvet Food and Drink Awards, have a new dish out there Friday and Saturday pop-up at Barbarella Cafe in Chesterton. It's cacio e pepe. Cacio is Romanesco for sheep's milk cheese, and that pairs perfectly with Molino's fresh, handmade tagliatelle. That's available now, and that's all for now. More news later.
Well, now time to head back into the fields with Steve Thompson, the foraging chef. We're right at the beginning of August, and Steve's got some foraging tales, I think.
Hi, yes, Sue. So, at the moment, it's fruit season. We started off, we've been picking a load of blackberries, the early parts of those. So, on bushes that have been in the main sun, we're getting some lovely, really ripe ones. The ones in the shade are still not quite there yet. Get picking, watch where the sun is. You can still get baskets full at the moment. Plums. Plums are great at the moment. So we've been picking loads of cherry plums, loads of Mirabelles. It's a bit early for our patches of Victoria plums, but I have in the northern parts of the county found Vicky plums that are ready. Check on your areas for those kind of ones. We've been doing loads of things with them at the moment. We've got, we'll hopefully have a pop-up soon, so keep an eye on our socials for that. And we've got some plums in our black garlic fermenter at the moment that's going really nicely for a little pre-dessert. And elderberries. So we've been picking elderberries just to start with as well.
Are elderberries beginning to blacken up? I thought they were still green.
No, it depends again. So in a lot of areas, they are still green, but in the areas where they caught the sun. So if you've been on any of our foraging tours at all, when we go around Newnham, that's where we've been foraging out today. So there's blackberries, Mirabelles and cherry plums and elderberries all ripe, ready to pick today in that sort of Newnham area. It just depends on the position of the sun, basically. If they get all day sun, they're going to ripen earlier. If they're a little bit in the shade, they'll be later. What I tend to find is the more northern parts in the county tend to be earlier on the fruit, and the further south we get, gets a bit later. If we go up to St Ives, it's 2 weeks earlier sort of than Cambridge, I find.
That's strange. You'd almost think it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, you would. There's
no rhyme, no reason. Fruit does what fruit does.
Yeah, it's just what we found over the years. And then we got some apples as well today. Some early apples, but a lovely lady cycled past me and Rowan as we were picking up our blackberries and got us to pick a few apples out of a bike basket, didn't she, Rowan? Yeah, to put in our little crumble for dinner tonight. So we're having apple and blackberry crumble tonight with some Mirabelle plums in there and some elderberries.
Oh, that sounds lovely. Mixed fruit crumble, nothing better.
Yeah, it's nice when it's just starting, looking like it's about to cloud over and rain tonight, isn't it? So, and with that, the weather. So we've gone from lots of intense heat and dryness to quite a lot of rain. And while it's been raining, it's not particularly been cold either. So wet and warm brings us into mushrooms. I would start to get out now and start checking like your Pennybun sep spots and things like that, because I think we're about to get going on that.
Where would you advise one should start looking, if you're not giving away any secrets?
I mean, the classic area around here for seps and things is Thetford Forest. You don't get them as much in Cambridgeshire. There are a couple of patches, but not really very much at all. So you're heading into the Norfolk, Suffolk kind of areas for those things where you've got a bit more sandier soil. But with Thetford, everyone knows it's there. You've got to be an early bird to really get them.
Which are the best woods around the Cambridge area then for mushroom foragers?
You're looking for really the ancient woodlands. Ancient woodlands with different soil types. So for me, places like Gamlingay Wood are fantastic because you've got areas of gravel, you've got areas of clay, you've got areas of chalk, and you've got areas of sandy soil all in that one small woodland. You've got different varieties of trees then, which the mushrooms can mycorrhize with, which means that they grow in pair basically with the tree. And it just gives us a wide variety. Old woodlands are always more established and therefore I find better to forage in because you've got a lot more variety of things. We forage in loads of woods around here. Haley's Wood is lovely. Knapwell Woods is really nice. There's so many around here. I think an easy way to find them is literally to go on Google and just type woods near me. And Google Maps will show you a load of woods on your Google Maps, and then you can work out where and when you want to go and just go and walk. Yeah. The more you walk, the more you find.
Well, I do so hope you're going to be doing some mushroom tours because, as I said, I never quite trust myself, but I know I trust you.
Yeah, the aim is to get out there. We have been really bad at doing tours this year. We've just been too busy, so the ones we've done have been private and sold out really quickly. As I said earlier, we're hoping to have some pop-ups soon, so there'll be some of those coming up and then hopefully some more exciting plans in the future. Been saying this for a while now, but things take time, but...
Of course they do. In terms of other things that you can do with plums and damsons and cherry plums, other than, if you like, the crumble, you mentioned about your black garlic fermenter? That sounds... What is that?
Yeah, so a black garlic fermenter is... It's by name, it's a bit of a lie, because there's no fermentation that goes on in the process at all. It's just what that bit of equipment is called. And it's... We're putting whatever we put in there, whether it's black garlic or plums or apples, opportunities are endless. We're using the Maillard's reaction on it. And that's basically a complex set of chemical reactions between amino acids and sugars. And in layman's terms, I suppose caramelization is quite an easy way of describing it.
Why black garlic? I mean, you're not putting black garlic in with your plums, are you?
No, not at all. It's just, I think that's the most common thing that that bit of equipment's called. So therefore, when you buy it, it says in big letters on the front, black garlic fermenter. It's for making that. We have done garlic. We had a private event we did recently where we did black shallot gougères and the shallots went through and it's dead. Our last private event, we had a black apple sorbet and things like that. It works better with things with high sugar content, but we're doing that a lot with fruit at the moment. And this bit of kit is not expensive. It's well under £100. Basically, you're giving kind of treacly notes to anything you do. So you're giving roasty, nutty, treacly notes. So you can put lots of things in there that contain sugar. So things like mushrooms, pretty much a no-go because you need the sugar and there's not enough in there. We've been playing around with unripe fruits. Obviously, unripe fruits are worse than ripe fruits because the sugars haven't separated yet. So they're still complex sugars. So they're not as easy to manipulate. But once you start to get ripe fruits, it's a really easy way to preserve.
That sounds really interesting. But how long does it take?
So I was always taught, and I used to do it with slow cookers. So you can do this with a slow cooker at home, and you did your black garlic for 6 weeks in a slow cooker, whereas this bit of kit, it kind of almost looks like a pressure cooker and it keeps it in there in 5-6 days and you've got it done, which seems is a long time again, but to get a product at the end which is fantastic and quite unique, it's well worth the effort.
That sounds really interesting because I've been noticing black garlic increasingly being available and thinking, and I've had some black garlic paste, I suppose, if you call it that, and it has really interesting taste.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think it's been going around for a good few years, well, a long time now, but it's been quite popular and fashionable the last sort of few years. Yeah, well, all we're ever looking for is easy ways to preserve. And it really is that. We find the easiest way to preserve something for us at that time, and then when it comes to writing dishes at the end, we look in our larder and we take things that we've already got preserved. It's about making foraging accessible. For us, we're really, really busy, so we don't have time to necessarily mess around and do loads of complex, really time-consuming things. So it's okay, at this point of the year, what's quick and easy? And for us at the moment, having a bit of kit on the side that we can just take the fruit and pour it into, shut the top, press a button, is a nice accessible way for us to do it.
How big is it? I'm so intrigued by this.
I mean, the kit we've got is a 4-litre one, right. So it's not massive at all, but 4 litres of cherry plum certainly is quite a good amount. It goes a long way. You can probably, sort of Granny Smith style apples, get about 8 in there at a time. So it doesn't take up too much space on your side. We've not noticed anything in the electricity bill, so.
That's really interesting. I think I might be more intrigued by getting something like that than an air fryer. Sounds like it's more fun.
Yeah, it's all about fun really, isn't it? We go through different phases at different times of the year and different seasons. So I think in spring we tend to ferment a lot more. where we can just add 2% salt, put it in a vacuum pack bag, seal it. I think when it comes to fruit and things like that, there's only so much vinegar we can make and alcohols out of it before we kind of run out of space to store them. So that's always our first go-to, our first big pick of fruit. We whack in a tub, we whack a load of sugar in it, top it up with water, mash it all up, and then we leave it to go to alcohol and then turn it into vinegar, so we have vinegar for the year. But after that's done, it's just trying to find fun and interesting ways to preserve it that's quick and easy.
In terms of consistency, how does it come out? I mean, does it puree that? Is there a sort of mixer element in it?
You literally pick the fruit up out of it at the end, and the fruit has obviously been cooked down slowly for a long time, so it is mushy, but then you just take that pulp and you turn it into a puree, and then you've got endless uses for it again at the end. So whether you wanted to then play around with jamming that puree at the end, or whether you wanted to make ice creams and sorbets, or whatever you can think of, really. It's like how we do with mushrooms in the season, where we dry things, or seeds and things, we dry them and powder them. It's because it's a really easy way to turn that into whatever we want. So we're keeping it in as much simple a base of form as possible, that we can turn it into as many different options when we come to menu writing.
That's intriguing. Now I can see why you suggested the sort of slow cooker as an alternative. Now I'm visualising how exactly this thing works. As a matter of interest, does this have a history behind it? Did people used to do this, or is this really quite a new technique?
I'm not entirely sure, to be entirely honest. I would presume that it's a newer technique for a lot of things, because I think finding the consistency, although maybe people jarred it and buried it all. I'm not entirely sure, to be honest.
Something for me to do some research on, I think. Any other things you'd be suggesting for this month and the beginning of next?
Yeah, we're still picking seeds. So we're kind of at the end of we're definitely not picking green seeds anymore for the hogweed and the Alexanders, but they're still are dried on the plant seeds, which are still working really well, filling up our spice jars. Fennel, wild fennel, any of your bronze fennels, anything like that, they're just starting to turn to seed now. And they're another great one. Why buy them from the shop when you can get hundreds and hundreds on a plant? One plant will do you the whole year easy. Yeah, nice, easy spices. Getting ready for mushroom season, as I say, we'll start to kick off fairly soon, and that'll be basically what we're picking for the foreseeable future.
I shall come back to you in the autumn to talk about mushrooms, I think. Thank you so much, Steve.
Excellent, thanks, Steve.
I remember my arms being dyed with blackberry juice back when I used to pick them and pack old ice cream tubs full of them. Did you do anything similar, Sue?
Oh, yes, I love picking blackberries. But the history of the garlic, black garlic fermenter, that's what I'm interested in. I'm going to find out a bit more.
Well, you can find Steve on Instagram, theforagingchef_. That's all one word, with the underscore at the end, of course. Moving on to wine news now, and we start with the Cambridge Wine Merchants, who this month are highlighting chilled reds. Do you chill your reds, Sue?
Well, yes, I do, but I'm going to tell you about this weird thing, which is called Tinto de Verano. That is red wine, lemonade, and a lot of ice. It's brilliant when it's hot. Sounds weird, but it's good.
Well, Cambridge Wine Merchants say that it's the lighter, fresher reds that show their true talent once they've been chilled. And they've got four styles of lighter reds from their favourite producers that do just this. They're available all this month at their Bridge Street and Cherry Hinton Road branches. You can try these four in 50ml pours for £25.
And did you know that you don't have to be a student at Cambridge University to join their wine society? They say the public can join at the discretion of the CUWS Executive Committee, but membership gets you, amongst other things, 10% discount for wines purchased in store at Cambridge Wine Merchants, Thirsty Cambridge, Noel Young Wines and Great Britannia. And you get a 10% discount at Market House Restaurant in the town square. Membership is available online at cuws.org.uk.
There's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Café Foy, just off Bridge Street by the river, posted this morning to say that they're launching their barista specials menu today, including flavours like strawberry ice matcha, iced elderflower matcha, and coffee cocktails like the orange Mont Blanc, and the banana crunch tail with banana, vodka, Kahlua and vegan cream with a demerara top, and cinnamon dusting.
Yeah, and on the other side of the coin, Cambridge City Food Bank, they're nearly out of coffee and are appealing for more. So they say, we put a small jar of coffee in all of our emergency food parcels. Please can you help us help those who are going without? Coffee can be dropped off at supermarket collection points like Asda in the Beehive Centre, the Waitrose in Trumpington, or the big Tesco's on Newmarket Road, or even at the Cambridge City Food Bank Warehouse. That's at Unit 4, Orwell Furlong, CB4, OWY. Actually, if you look at their website, they tell you all the things they're short of at the moment, including things like porridge oats, rice, tinned peas, soups, and tinned fish too. That's our quick look at social media. Green Onions, signalling the start of our job section. We begin with Fitzbillies on Trumpington Street. They need an assistant manager. You'll need previous experience at assistant manager level. You'll get a free meal and drinks when on shift. Pay is $30,000 a year, so nip into Fitzbillies to inquire if you can. Or contact details are on their website.
The Permit Room in Cambridge needs a server, and you'll gain experience of all their dishroom dishes as well as their drinks, curries and sharing plates. Pay is up to £16 an hour.
Amelie Restaurant at their new location outside Ely. They're looking for a barista and a waitress.
Aromi are looking for a pizza chef. They'll pay £15 per hour and a barista at £12.21 per hour.
St John's College need a casual cafe assistant.
And finally, Flock Cafe at Burwash Farm in Barton are looking for front of house staff. You'll need excellent customer service and food safety skills. Just email Lindsay at flockcafe.co.uk.
There we go.
Well done.
That music calls time, gentlemen, please, on today's programme. Don't forget, you can catch Flavour on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon, repeated on Sunday at 1 p.m, Monday at 2 p.m, and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. We're either really popular or this station needs more shows. We're also available as a podcast, by the way.
Coming up next on Cambridge Radio is the Cambridge Music Mix, followed by Home with Lucy Milazzo at 4 p.m.
But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 23rd of August with more food and drink, news and jobs for Cambridge. So, until then...
Goodbye.
Goodbye.